You're listening to the Chances Report on 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Dave Edwards, and I am with, once again, Mike Lovell, who's the Chancellor of the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. Welcome back to the program.
Oh, thanks, Dave.
Last month on the program, we actually alluded to the governor's budget address and some of the early words you were getting about the governor's intention. Since that time, of course, the governor delivered his budget address. We talked last month that you were suspecting some relative good news for the university budget and, by extension, UWM's budget. So what have you learned since?
Well, I think the good news is definitely the word of the day. For the first time in, you know, at least 6 years, there actually is some good news coming in the fact there's going to be some money put towards the UW system and our institutions, and there's no base budget cut, which is certainly news, good news to all of our ears. And in fact, I think the governor's budget includes about $181 million of new taxpayer investments into the system, which is really a significant increase.
Mm-hmm. The first question, of course, is why? Do you have any indication as to why?
Well, I think that he recognizes that certainly one of the things that there is quite a bit of money for is the $89 million is targeted for system-wide, you know, quality and access in the system, which a good amount of that money is going to be going towards faculty and staff salaries. And I think he's gotten the message that it's only so long that you can underpay your employees before they either, you know, A, leave or go do something else. And he realized that we have such a good high-quality educational system that we need some kind of influx and investment to help preserve the great faculty and staff that we have on our campuses.
So that problem has persisted, the ability to retain good faculty?
Sure. You know, and it unfortunately, a week or two doesn't go by when I learn we're losing another good faculty to another institution. I just learned we lost another faculty to Texas A&M University that I was disappointed in, somebody who I have a lot of respect for, UWM, who's been a great faculty member. But again, he had an opportunity where about a 75% increase in his salary to go there. And, you know, how can we, you know, really match that, particularly maybe for a few superstars, we can try to do something, but certainly by and large, when the faculty is 20% underpaid compared to their peers, it creates a real challenge for us.
Mm-hmm. I pick up in this one other thing, and it may be not related to the dollars, but it seems to me that in past years, you and other chancellors in the regions have asked for flexibility to mm-hmm. take a look at these issues. And that seems to – you now seem to have that flexibility, or
yeah.
The regents do.
Yeah, and actually that was one of the most significant things to come out of this budget, let alone the increased $181 million in new investment. The ability for the regents, Board of Regents, to actually set the pay plans and the compensation for the campuses separate than the state's pay plan is something that's really important. I think it's – and again, something we've been talking about a lot as chancellors is that you're asking – faculty and staff on campuses to be internationally competitive, whether there's a general state employee who maybe works for the DMV or other, we don't ask them to be internationally competitive. It's just kind of a different apples to orange comparison. So we do feel like our employees on the UW campuses should be paid, have their pay plan determined in a different mechanism than general state employees.
Mm-hmm. So you now have some flexibility. You have some money to retain and pay your employees. What other funds are in this budget that impact the
university? Well, there's $21 million for ongoing fringe benefits and facility leases and some normal inflammationary costs. So, you know, that funds just help us continue operating the way we are, you know, and compensating for inflation and other things. And also, there's some $42 million in construction projects that were ongoing, you know, things like our Kenwood IRC. You know, we got part of the money up front first, we're going to get part of the money the next biennium, so that money carried through for us. So our capital projects can go in. There's also a significant amount of funds being proposed to go into the Northwest Quad to help redevelop those facilities as well. So we're very excited, you know, about some of the projects that are going to be coming down for the capital projects that are continuing on for UWM.
And that doesn't mean, of course, that it's fully funded by the state. You're still out raising money for
sure. Exactly. No, exactly. And we're always looking for new revenue streams to help really build out and expand these things. Another thing, there are also a $20 million incentive grant fund for really boost economic development. So things that we can do on our campus, we commit proposals to the state to actually, you know, get a significant amount of funds, you know, to help with job creation and economic development.
Mm-hmm. And that would come in the form of what, research or what? How does that manifest?
Yeah, so typically they would be the form of attracting new talent. They're in specific areas, particularly the cluster areas, which the state has identified. as having great economic potential. So we would be asking for faculty members and staff, money for them to be hired. They work directly within these cluster areas to really make the state more competitive.
Mm-hmm. In some respects, what I'm reminded of is, we've talked about this on the show, and quite frankly, previous chancellors have talked about this, and that is the university as an economic engine for the state. And it sounds like that message is getting through.
I think so. And I do think, that the governor himself has invested so much in job creation. And to be honest with you, the universities can be an important part of that. And I think that this investment shows that the governor believes that the universities are a good resource to invest in to help with his agenda of economic growth and creating jobs.
Mm-hmm. I also noticed that this is, again, something you and I spent a fair amount of time talking about last month, and that is the UW Flexible Option Program is now being funded with startup funds.
Yeah, and that's great because, again, we are the only university in the system that is rolling out these flex degree programs. And so we're going to be a direct beneficiary of the money put into the flex degree option program.
Mm-hmm. So, the governor, makes a speech and of course, then it goes to the legislature. I mean, but this is not all done yet. There's a lot more massaging to typically happen.
No, there'll be quite a bit still happening, over the next couple of months. One of the things we're continuing to do is meet decision makers and legislatures from across the state to make sure we get the maximum support we can for not only the system, but UWM.
Mm-hmm. But after a lot of years of negative numbers being thrown your way, this does have to feel good.
Yeah, it's actually really nice not to be going into the year trying to figure out how we're going to, cut the budget some more.
So speaking about the Regents, I know that at the Regents February meeting, you were part of a presentation on improving student success within the University of Wisconsin system. And this has clearly been on your mind for a long time, how to improve the graduation rate and retain students and the like.
Yes. And then again, this is something that's very important to our campus and actually really across the country is how do we make sure that we provide an environment that our students can be successful, we can retain them, and actually have them graduate within 5 or 6 years. And what my presentation was to the chancellors was talking about the things we're doing at UWM to better retain our students. And one of the things that I thought was very important was to talk about how we do compare to our peer institutions, because one of the things I think the Regents can fall into is comparing all the schools within the system against each other, which is really like comparing apples to oranges in some cases.
Hmm. Why?
Well, you think about, first of all, the demographics of the students at different institutions. For example, the median family income in Milwaukee for our students is about $60,000 a year, where in Madison it's about $100,000 per year. Now, what does that mean realistically? Well, our students, their families can't contribute as much to education, so many of our students work 30 or more hours a week, and so that, affects their impact to get through college in a timely manner because sometimes they actually have to stop out for a semester to mm-hmm. save more money to go back in. And also, they can't take as many credits because they're working so much. And the second thing is we're the only institution in the system that has this dual both access and research mission. We're the only one that's research intensive, but has an access mission. And those students that we accept through the access missions oftentimes aren't as well prepared as, say, maybe the students that would be accepted to Madison. And so the fact that they have to take remedial work on our campus, that takes more time for them to actually get to classes where they can get credit for. So to have them graduate in the same amount of time as a student that maybe goes to Madison isn't a direct comparison. What is a better comparison is comparing us to other urban institutions like ourselves across the country.
And I want to give you a chance to tell us more about how UWM does compare. But I will tell you that someone who is, not involved in this on a regular basis, the shocking thing was that the benchmark was 6-year graduation rate. It used to be 4, except you, one or two special programs might be 5. But now, is that the norm, a 6-year?
Yeah, and actually, it was really interesting because at the Regents meeting, I found out why that was. And it goes back to the NCAA. They, back when they started tracking the graduation rates, 30 or 40 years ago, they said, well, it's not fair. The student athletes have a bigger commitment on their time than the general student.
Wow.
So let's give that, for fair comparison, let's do 6-year graduation rates. Well, somehow that became the standard across the country.
So it doesn't mean that you're not expecting students to graduate in 4 or 5 years.
No, it's very, we talked a lot about the Regents meeting. How can we find ways for students to graduate in 4 years? And, what are some of the things you can do? And one of them actually, because we have one of the problems we have in the UW system is we have students have trouble sometimes getting classes they need to graduate, just because the course sections fill up. And this is, again, where online and technology may be useful to open up more unique ways for students to get into classes, maybe on online options or hybrid options that aren't restricted by essential classroom size we have on our campus.
So the statistic at 40%, UWM is among the lowest six-year graduation rates in the UW system. But you're talking about your peer universities. So who are those universities and how does UWM fit in?
Sure. So it's nice because other urban institutions like our own, we're actually right in the middle. You know, we're right around the median. When you compare us to some of the better ones, actually the University of Texas at Dallas has a 61% graduation rate, which is fantastic. Getting to the University of Toledo is 45%. University of Akron is right with us at 40%. Portland State University, which is, again, one of our direct peers, is at 38%, and all the way down to Wayne State, which is 26%. So, you know, in terms of urban institutions that have a similar mission to we do, obviously we want to improve. 40% is not where we want to be. We've actually set a goal as a campus over the next 3 to 4 years to try to get to 50% six-year graduation rates. And I think that we're doing a lot right now on campus to try to really help those numbers. And I think first and foremost among those is, you know, we're getting ready to head into another campaign, and we're really focusing on student first, which means we're going to be trying to raise as much money for scholarships as we can, because we know students that we provide scholarships to don't have to work as much. They can go from 2-to-1 jobs or not work at all, so they can focus on their studies and be more successful.
Mm-hmm. And scholarship money has been getting harder and harder to find, too.
Yeah, but I will say this, as we interviewed our top 40 prospects in terms of things that they'd like to invest in on the campus in the next campaign. And by and large, the number one thing that our potential donors told us is they think the college cost is the biggest issue facing students in universities right now, and they'd like to give scholarships to really keep the cost of college down to students, particularly at places like UWM, where so many first in their family going to school.
Mm-hmm. And I know that UWM, like a lot of other institutions, but it seems to me that UWM has really taken a lead on this, is you have a lot of programs from tutoring to all sorts of things that are really designed to sort of, I don't know, not allow students to feel like they're alone, yeah, that they've got some backing.
And it's really, again, in the last 5 years, we've really done a lot to try to help these students. And again, when you think about what's happening on our campus, we're becoming more of a traditional campus. As we've talked before, 15,000 students live within 4 blocks of campus. We can offer programs on our campus that now students can get to very easily and take advantage of. We had formal mentoring programs in the last 5 years have gone from about 4% participation of the freshman class to 68%. You know, so this huge increase of students taking advantage of mentoring on campus. Supplemental instruction from 3% to 25%. 25% of students go and get supplemental instruction in different course areas. Tutoring. We've more than doubled the amount of students. We're up to 26% of our freshman class take advantage of tutoring programs we have on our campus. One of the great things we have in the last 3 years is we've developed living learning communities. Again, we require all of our freshmen to live on campus, and now we allow them to live in communities of like interest. So that could be a major, that could be an outside interest to the school, it can be things like innovation. And really, we've gone from 3 living learning communities with 77 students to 22 with 542 students. So again, when they feel engaged, they have the support network around them, they're going to be much more successful. And again, we look long term. One of the neat things we have in Milwaukee is that we have over 60,000 corporations here. And I always joke around, we have 2 companies for every student on our campus. And our students take advantage of that because almost half of our students have formal internships with companies here. And so, again, that really helps them with their studies as well when they're doing the formal internships in their area of plan of study, and they're taking advantage of the resources of the city of Milwaukee. And another thing is, you know, we have thousands of students doing undergraduate research. Again, those types of activities help them get a broader picture of the education, really help them be more successful.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's baked into the DNA of this institution that you're going to accept students who may not be accepted elsewhere, and that you're obviously trying to have a diverse student body. So it's a different deal than at some other universities.
No, sure. And again, you know, we're on track to have 30% students of color, you know, by in the next 2 years. And again, the more things we can do to engage those students, and sometimes those students are less prepared, and it's not that they don't have the potential. We just need to find a way, once we get them here, to give them all that they need so that they can not only move through their credits and coursework, but they actually graduate in a timely manner.
Yeah, they're successful, yeah. You're listening to the Chancellor's Report on WUWM Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Dave Edwards, along with the Chancellor of UWM, Mike Lovell. want to shift gears here. We've talked on this program really for several years about the innovation campus in Wauwatosa that UWM is working on right now. And you know, frankly, there was criticism about the attention to the environment on the site. And I know that you guys have been working on this, and you've developed a plan now for how you're not only going to build out that campus, but how that fits into the habitat.
Yeah. And this was something that, you know, I think that everyone knew this day was coming when we were going to start moving forward and building out on the county grounds. So when the first set of trees went down out there, people that were concerned about the environment, yeah, they were concerned, and they didn't realize that we've actually been undergoing a six-year plan with the city of Wauwatosa for building out the Innovation Campus that includes some major investments by the university. And also, we have some of the top experts, not only in Wisconsin, but in the world, located right here in Milwaukee and on our campus, that are going to help us make sure that that habitat is preserved and really use some state-of-the-art technology in the way that we preserve the environment.
So what are some of the things that you're looking at?
Well, first we talk about we've set aside 11 acres for habitat protection area for our future nature conservancy. And really, this land was inspired by the Real Estate Foundation at a cost of more than $2 million, which we consider to be a significant investment. And this is really to protect the monarch butterflies that visit each year, to have a habitat that makes sure ensures that they still come there. And we've actually one of our alumna, Susan Borkin, actually is head of the Sciences and Curator in Vertebrate Zoology at the Milwaukee Public Museum. She's really helped us develop that habitat in the ecology to defining what the habitat area should look like so that when the butterflies, you know, do visit, you know, they have a good experience there.
Maybe they'll pay tuition.
Yeah.
also work on some native plant species.
Oh, yeah. And this is very important. You know, when you think about the land out there, we want to keep it as natural as possible. And so we actually have a field expert, Dr. James Reinhartz, who runs our field station up north, that is really helping us with plant species to make sure that the protected area in the Milwaukee County grounds provides a really aesthetic appeal for the landscape, utilizing really native species that really will help us grow gardens and provide wildlife habitats. And really just his expertise is really phenomenal. And even against battling infestation of non-native species, invasive species, to protect the land. And so removal of shrubs and plants that coincide with future plans to have natural plantings really of things like oak trees. And the one thing that I will say is that we have you know, for any tree we're cutting down, we're planting a new native species. Many of the trees that were taken down were not native. They were actually more known as scrub trees that had many times reached their functional lifetime.
Mm-hmm. There was also concern. Obviously, there's concern anytime anything is built about rainwater runoff, yeah. and I'm sure that has to be an issue there too.
And again, one of the things we're very, very proud of is we are using a state-of-the-art technology in terms of the way we handle the water on the campus, and we're utilizing something called bioswales, which is really a natural alternative traditional open detention ponds, so there will be no standing water, and actually every drop of water that falls, you know, on the campus will be retained on the campus using these bioswales. So there's not going to be any significant runoff. So there'll be no more runoff, no matter how many parking lots or buildings we build. There'll be no more runoff on that campus than there currently is right now. Which again, and we're using really state of the art bioswale technology. And Kate Nelson, who was our UWM Chief Sustainability Officer, is also helping to manage the campus in its ecological landscape.
Mm-hmm. So this has really become a project of UWM, but you're also drawing on a lot of other resources to make sure there's, I guess, gets done right.
Yes.
You spoke at BizStarts, Milwaukee's College Consortium Leaders Luncheon, and a number of other executives were part of that discussion, and it was about building an innovation ecosystem.
Yeah.
That's a little different than what we just talked about. What is this ecosystem about?
Well, it's really the idea is that the university can play a very important role in really the economic future of a region. And I've often said before, if you look at any part of the country that is doing well economically, they have a university that is helping drive that growth. And we believe, due to our mission, you know, as being a research and being a large urban university, that we should be an important part of developing the innovation ecosystem in southeastern Wisconsin. And first and foremost is that we want to produce graduates that are innovative and entrepreneurial and have good critical thinking skills and will add value whether they start their own company, which 54% of this generation want to work for themselves rather than somebody else, or they go into an existing organization and provide, you know, a new way of looking at things and are very innovative and creative nature for existing organizations.
Mm-hmm. And that word is really important, and it seems to keep coming up all the time now, entrepreneurial, yeah. Innovation. And so your message was what? Sign us up? We're in
on
this?
Oh, no, exactly. Well, we talked a lot about the things we're doing on our campus. We've talked before about the first startup challenge we have, and we're really trying to develop new ways for our students to have pathways to entrepreneurship and let their creativity and innovation, you know, shine through. And so we really want to create a way for our students to create technology and great ideas and have them be able to filter up. Because when you think about Southeastern Wisconsin needs to really improve not only their startup culture, but also innovations within bigger organizations. And so we want to produce students that can do that. And I use as a comparison in the presentation about the number of startups launched in Wisconsin compared to other parts of the country. The San Francisco area, for example, launched 3,400 companies last year. We were just around 39 here, you know, startups in Wisconsin. So yeah. The scale is much different. You know, I'm talking about here in Milwaukee. And so we need to have our students, but then our recent graduates also have, you know, that part of their DNA if they want to do that, and then show them the opportunities they would have.
So how does UWM encourage that that kind of growth in this region? Because obviously you can have some of these programs for students while they're in school, but I mean, is there a role that the university can play to say, and do it here, start up here?
Yeah. And so actually a lot of that's about collaboration and partnerships. And the reasons why I talked to the Biz Starts is, you know, I wanted to create – BizStarts has a great support network. So if you're a student, you have an idea, or you're a young entrepreneur, have an idea, maybe you don't have the business acumen, BizStarts has people that have done this. They have serial entrepreneurs that can help new entrepreneurs actually get on their feet and really develop a business plan and model, realizing how to go out and get customers and how to create a supply chain to build their products and really help them be more successful. And I think it really builds on itself because most of the – new entrepreneurs coming out, or you know, recent grads. Sometimes you know they're not even graduates, and they're still in school. And many of them actually, not many of them, but some of them drop out of school to start their own business. You know,
well, those stories are all over the place, right?
And so, but just really create an environment for them to be successful. And I think that it's great, you know, working with the GMC and Mike, which is Innovation Milwaukee, and Julie Taylor's efforts. You know, we're trying to align with them so that we create an environment so that the ideas can forward. In launch companies, once those companies get launched, because traditionally only 1 in 20 are successful, making sure that we have as many successful companies come out and make it through the first few years.
So as you were talking there, the thing that struck me was that you have to recruit the right kind of faculty member to want to promote that kind of innovative spirit. Mm-hmm. Whereas, you know, let's be honest, the traditional faculty member is not seen as someone who's terribly connected in the cutting edge, what's going on right now. It's like I'm going to lecture from a book. It seems like that's part of like a real tidal wave change.
Well, I think, you know, one of the things that I talked about a few years ago when I was dean of engineering, I hired 23 new faculty my first year. And through that process, you know, we interviewed 97 different faculty. And what struck me during those interviews is how all of those potential candidates asked about how intellectual property was managed on the campus, how they could start their own companies, you know, what was our technology transfer organization like, because they were coming out, this new generation, this is part of their culture. Mm-hmm. You know, so traditionally at research universities now, most of the faculty are looking to start their own companies and develop their own technologies, you know, particularly from the science and engineering. But even we see things like in social science areas. We've had several companies launched, you know, from our Helmbayer School of Social Welfare, for example. Ron Montgomery has a company that's launched that's been wildly successful. So it's not just it's not just scientists, but it's across the board. But I think traditionally now the new graduates coming out from universities are looking to have these opportunities for them.
Mm-hmm. Is UWM ready for that?
Oh, I think so. And I think the fact that we have the Research Foundation led by Brian Thompson, you know, I talk about his portfolio. You know, when I came here in 2008, he was the first person that I interviewed with. And I said, well, how many patents do you have? Well, he had one patent. I said, well, how many licenses have you done? There was zero. I said, well, how many companies have you started? Well, we haven't started any. And I look now, you know, you go 4.5 years later and I look at his portfolio, you know, he's started, you know, 7 or 8 companies, has 12 licenses, has literally 100, you know, along the patent pipeline, hundreds of new ideas coming on the patent pipeline. It's like, I know I described it, it's almost like a nuclear bomb went off. Yeah, because you went from one dot to literally over 100 things managed in your portfolio. So I definitely think UWM is ready for this.
So even in a tight economy, you think that that growth will continue to happen?
Oh, I definitely think so. And the thing about it is I think if you look across the board, you know, new job creation, you know, even though, you know, large companies can bring in a lot of people, but the true growth of any company in terms of jobs is traditionally with new startup companies. That's usually the way new jobs are created within society. And so I think that even in this tight economy, you know, that there are still people looking to invest in, you know, new ideas and take chances on people.
I know that you recently attended a winter meeting of the Business Higher Education Forum in Washington. So what is that?
So this is really a forum. Really, the true leaders, the CIOs of Fortune 500 countries, some of the biggest CIOs in the country, get together with university system presidents and university presidents and chancellors to talk about, you know, how we can better align, you know, higher education with business for the benefit of the U.S. And so this is a group that I had a meeting at the White House in June, and this was the follow-up to that. This was their winter meeting. And the nice thing about it is that the reason why I was there is because, you know, we are looked at it for this Business Higher Ed Forum. We are one of 5 pilot projects that they are looking to launch in the country, and ours is focused on water. And it really shows that our strength in this, you know, in our relationship between business and higher ed around water, and with the Water Council, Dean Amhouse was there with me. David Garman, our dean of the School of Social Science, was there with me. And we were talking about the ways of working together, and it's really aligning, you know, what the needs are of the business with the skill sets of the students that are graduating, in particular, ultimately drawing a STEM pipeline. So getting students interested in STEM fields because they see career pathways in water.
Mm-hmm. Are you seeing students paying more and more attention to that now?
Oh, there's no doubt about it. Yeah, and one of the things that we have to move very quickly on, you know, and as David talked about, is, you know, we need to start right now. Our School of Social Sciences is a graduate program. There's so much interest at undergraduate level that this fall they're going to be launching a minor, and the next year they're going to be launching a major, just because there's so much, you know, interest from people on campus to get this experience in water technology.
Fascinating. I wanted to spend just the last couple of moments that we have here talking about the return of clause versus pause. Yeah. I don't know why don't you tell us what that is?
Well, again, we talked about, a little about this last year, but this is for the Lakefront Marathon, and it's a friendly competition between us and Concordia University, because the marathon runs through both of our campuses. And last year, we won the trophy, the Postal Coast Trophy. I think we had an average time of our runners of about 12 minutes faster than Concordia's, but it was a real good effort. And I described it as in 2011, we had about 8 people from campus run the marathon. In 2012, with the challenge, we had 95 members. So it's just a significant increase. And they had similarly, they went 3 or 4 and went to 45, you know, and so it's a lot of fun. And we already have, you know, about 80 people interested in joining up this year to do the challenge. So we hope to beat last year's number of 95.
Are you in this again?
I'll do it again, yes. Whether I'm ready or not, I'll be there.
Yeah. Oh, but here's the thing. You're talking about it now. It's in October. Plenty of time for everyone
to
prepare.
That's right. That's right.
And this is important now. You got a title to defend.
That's right. Yeah.
Well, we're just about out of time. I want to thank you once again for joining us today. Good luck in the next month. We'll see you next month.
Thanks, Dave.
Mike Lovell is our guest in conversation. He is the Chancellor of the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. You've been listening to the Chancellor's Report on 89.7 WUWM. I'm Dave Edwards. Thanks for listening.